Well, I can tell you what not to do, and that's go out drinking every night and fall asleep in class.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Coding on a Podcast. This week we have It's Pinky or Natalia Natchan on the show. And we have a really fun conversation, including some of her experiences working different jobs in Japan, how she learned Japanese, along with some of her advice, as well as some crazy stories that happened over there. So again, guys, if you enjoy the podcast, make sure to leave a like and subscribe, and I'll catch you guys at the end of the podcast. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Quarticana Podcast. My name is Raza, and I'm joined by my co-host, Eric. We talk to people of all types of backgrounds about their lives in Japan, studying Japanese, or even tips and tricks on how to learn the language. This week, we're joined by a very special guest, Natalia Natchan.
Yeah, so Natalia is a YouTuber and music artist who's been making videos on YouTube since 2015. And she's lived in Japan for 4 years, and she was also involved in the idol scene in Japan, and is really fluent Japanese as well. And today we're hoping to get a closer look behind her history of Japan and Japanese. So Natalia, can you give us a quick background of who you are and where you're at today?
Yeah, my name is Pinky. Some people call me Natalia Natchan. I was a YouTuber in Japan for a couple years. I went to beauty school over there and learned Japanese as well. And I'm currently making music in Los Angeles.
It's the dream right there. So, I mean, speaking of Japan here, I mean, what exactly was your first experience with Japanese culture, Natalia?
Oh, man, we got to go all the way back there. That was a long time.
Way back.
I want to say, like, probably Sailor Moon when I was, like, 5 or something. But I didn't really know what Japan was. I want to say when Puffy Yamayumi came out in the United States. Did you guys ever watch that?
I mean, I did see it, but I never really, like, watched it religiously or anything. I think I watched, like, some Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, right. That makes sense. Well, they kind of got me into Japanese music. I started learning more about the culture. I really liked their fashion. And then I found this magazine called Fruits, which was, like, Harajuku Street Snaps. And that's pretty much where it all began. I think I was around 10 years old and then just branched out from there.
I see. So it was kind of like a combination of music and fashion.
Surprisingly, the whole anime, interest in anime and stuff like that didn't really come until, like, I want to say middle school. So kind of far after that, I was more interested in, like, even the traditional stuff.
I see. So did you think about, like, studying Japanese at that time?
Yeah, so I want to say around when I was 10, I really started getting, like, a obsession with Japanese culture, not just the fashion and stuff. So I tried to get the Rosetta Stone. I tried to watch Japanese. Well, I don't even know what I could watch online back in the day. Don't really remember, but I tried to, like, surround myself with it. The first Japanese, like, CD I ever bought was, like, an anime CD from the anime Love Hina. And I tried to memorize all of the songs and all of the lyrics. And that, like, kind of helped me learn how to pronounce Japanese. But it was really random because it was, like, the only like, CD, anime or J-pop music CD I could find in my town.
I see. I mean, luckily you did get it at the end of the day.
Right, true.
Yeah, I mean, I did see one of your videos where you had your brother on, and it seemed like you were really monopolizing Japan in the house, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he could have got into it if he wanted to. I feel it was probably hard to outdo my obsession with it, so that's probably the only reason.
Yeah, it looks like he was slacking, you know, unfortunate. But anyways, I mean, you did end up going to Japan for after high school, right? Which was, I mean, a pretty big move. I mean, especially when you are a high schooler. I mean, personally, I can't even imagine. I'm, like, basically a kid just trying to go to college at that point. But, I mean, how did that really, like, come about? And was that a difficult conversation with your family?
Honestly, because I had the obsession with Japan for so long, I feel like they would have been more surprised if I was like, yo, I changed my mind. I'm not going to Japan. Like, screw it. Just erase all of that. I think that would have been more surprising than telling them I wanted to actually move there. I think they were, it was more of just like, when is she going to do it?
Oh, I see. I see. And I guess, like, how did you find, like, where you're going to be and, like, what you wanted to do there right off the bat?
Well, the weird thing is, like, the first time I ever went to Japan at all was when I was, like, 15 years old with a high school class. And, I mean, as soon as I got there, I was like, I want to live here one day. Mm-hmm. But I actually got to travel there two other times. Or was it? Once or twice after that, I got to just travel there. And one of those times I stayed for 3 months and I was kind of doing some like underground idol stuff and like selling CDs and stuff at the time. And when I was 18, I did an audition for AVEX. I don't know if you guys know them, but they did like an international audition. And after that, like basically they told me they couldn't let me win because I didn't have a visa. But if I came to move to Japan, I could join AVEX and like they would give me singing and dance lessons and stuff. So that was a big reason that I moved there. And then, of course, just wanting to be there.
I see. Wow. I mean, and like actually coming over to Japan, I mean, again, like a big step. And I mean, it's great that you already had that in your pocket, making it a lot easier to just make the move there. Right. I mean,
definitely.
Yeah, and one thing that we usually talk about on our podcast is when our guests kind of go to Japan for the first time. And I mean, I guess at this point you've been to Japan multiple times, but when you kind of got there first, did you run into any culture shock or anything that kind of was very different that you didn't expect at all?
So when I first went to Japan, I had not really been to anywhere outside of Missouri either, except for maybe Florida whenever I was like really young. But I went from like Missouri, middle of nowhere, to this huge city, one of the biggest cities in the world. And so it was just so overwhelming. And I don't know, I guess I hated where I grew up, like from the time I was a kid. So it just seemed like a heaven to me because I don't know, I wasn't used to all that hustle and bustle. It was pretty shocking, but like in a good way.
I see. So also, were you able to speak Japanese by that time, like that you traveled there? Because you said you were also like working with those idol groups, right?
Yeah. So the first time I went with the Japanese class that I was studying with. And I was like, I knew the basics because I was studying with them. But the teacher was American and it was in Missouri. So it wasn't like anything too intense. So, yeah, I knew the basics, but I don't think I know as much. I knew as much as I know now. Like, it definitely took a while to get to where I am now.
I see. And I mean, you've worked like several jobs in Japan too. And I mean, like the first one kind of being, like you said, you kind of got the opportunity to take singing and dancing lessons with the idol group company. Like, how long did that go for? And then how did it kind of branch off into other opportunities for you?
So funny enough, when I was taking the singing and dancing lessons, I wasn't actually doing any idol activities. I had done some idol stuff in Japan on one of those first trips I went to when I was a teenager. And I kind of gained popularity on the internet first and then went over to do stuff. And I had quit that completely. And then I did the AVEX audition. And when I entered AVEX, they were like, they didn't even want me to make music really. They were like, hey, you should start a YouTube channel. But I was doing singing and dancing lessons. They also gave me DJ lessons. But being in AVEX, they actually did introduce me to this one cafe. It was like my first part-time job in Japan, like ever. And this one guy who's kind of popular in the Japanese Shibuya scene, his name is like Shibuya Akun, and he was running the cafe. And it was a pretty popular cafe for like talent agencies to go and have meetings, or sometimes these Japanese magazines would have cute little photo shoots there. So working there, it really connected me with a lot of people and like the fashion industry and stuff like that. So working there led me to working at a place called Shibuya 109, which I don't know if you guys have heard of, like the big fashion place in Shibuya. And working there, I met a girl who would come in sometimes from the Osaka location, and she was a DJ. So then she was like, hey, I heard you DJ. Do you want to DJ at Womb? And so, like, everything just kind of came full circle. Like, it really all started from that one part-time job that I didn't even like. Like, that job was so boring, but I feel like it really opened up a lot of doors. So it worked out.
Wow, I mean, that's amazing. Who would have ever thought? I mean,
right.
Especially having to deal with, you probably had to deal with a lot of customers there too, right?
Oh man, yeah. Oh no, customer service cannot do that anymore.
Were you like consciously studying Japanese, or was it just like through immersion you were getting better?
I think the language school, because the first 2 years I was there, I was going to language school. That definitely helped, especially with the kanji. But I also think a big part of it was just, like you said, being immersed in it. And when I worked in that cafe, it was in Shibuya. So it was like a lot of young people. A lot of people would speak like very like slangy Japanese. And now that's kind of how I speak in Japanese. And I think it had a big influence on the way I speak now.
I see. And I mean, you're kind of like out and about and like kind of like the hustle and bustle of Shibuya, like you mentioned. And I mean, we've heard like stories from a lot of other people where maybe they weren't really too much in Shibuya, but like just in Tokyo, it was kind of difficult for them to make friends. It's kind of like a notion you kind of hear about Japan sometimes, where it's like, it's sometimes it's hard to really make deep connections, you know. For you, did you find it like easy, difficult, or how was it like making like social connections for you? Because I mean, you did get a lot through that one job to begin
yeah.
with.
I think it's definitely kind of similar to LA. They say people are kind of like shallow and everything surface level. And when you do find a friend, it's like a very special thing. One of my friends I made when I was going to beauty school, and we're still really close now, but we've known each other for so long. And even talking with her, she mentioned like, yeah, Japanese people don't really become close friends until like, I don't know, they've known each other for 10 years. And so I met a lot of people, but I don't think I made like a lot of really deep lasting friendships. But yeah, I think it just takes a little more time over there. I would say though, that whenever I DJed, like I had this group I would DJ with at Womb, and they were like my best friends, like at the time that I was DJing with them. Now some of them have kids, some of them like got married and they're all doing their own thing. But I will say that that was like a really good experience for me. And I felt like I had people that had my back.
Wow. I mean, and speaking of those DJ experiences, you have like any notable like jobs that you went and did with them where you like went to some like really cool place?
Mostly whenever I was DJing, it was the main places in Tokyo, but I was kind of lucky because we would get big name American DJs that I feel like I wouldn't have the opportunity to play with unless, like, I don't know, I had some really good connections. But I got to perform before Datsik, who's a pretty big dubstep DJ here in the States. And I got to meet Ghastly, who's, I was kind of like in the EDM dubstep scene at the time, but I got to meet Ghastly and just a couple other like DJs I really liked at the time. I didn't think I would ever be able to meet them, but I was able to just because I was DJing in Japan instead of the United States.
Wow. What an opportunity. And I mean, I guess like you had the like being able to work so many different types of jobs in Japan. You also got to see kind of like the good and the bad, right? Was there anything that kind of caught you off guard or that you didn't really like about just working in jobs in Japan?
Oh my God. Especially like 109, working at a clothing store in Japan was like so boring. Like if you think it's boring here, you should try working in Japan because you literally have to like walk in circles to look like you're doing stuff. You cannot talk to your coworkers. Like my coworker would like whisper to me because she knew we weren't supposed to be talking to each other. And like we would have to say the same things over and over, like, "Inashimasen, inashimasen." Like it was a lot.
It's like a robot.
I don't think I would go back to that. Yeah, no, for real. It felt like I was a robot. It did not feel, it was not cool.
Yeah, I mean, I always wondered how it felt like to do that. Because I mean, whenever you're in Japan, like any of you guys who have been there know that as soon as you walk into any place like you've ever been, you're going to have everyone telling you, like, I mean, you're going to have like someone right next to you all the way through the entire like shopping experience, really, right? And I mean,
right.
Kind of being on the the working side of that always made me wonder. I was like, wow, like you get a lot of respect for being able to do that for every single customer that walks in through those doors.
And they look so busy. And now I know why, but it's like, damn, they're always busy, huh? Just like walking around, fixing everything. The stores are like smaller than a closet and they'll still be fixing stuff for like an hour.
Yeah, I always found it funny because I'd always like just randomly look around and then all the clothes would be like perfectly folded. But you know what? It's time to fold them again, you know?
Right. Mess them up a little bit, like go back, spin in a circle and fold them again.
For real, I mean, you gotta make sure you're working still, I guess. But yeah. I mean, were the working hours fine there, like in 109? Like, do you have to work like extra? I mean, you did have to go around in circles a lot, but did you have to do that for like multiple hours in a row?
Yeah, I mean, thinking back now, I don't know how I did it. I feel like I used up so much energy back then, and that's why I'm probably so tired all the time, because I'd like go to language school. I was going to language school at the time, but I'd go to language school in the morning, ride a train for an hour, walk 20 minutes to school, go to Shibuya, work there until 10 p.m. And our lunch break, I think, was like 30 minutes, maybe 30 minutes to an hour. But it just seemed really, really short. It was not long enough. And then you get the customers that want to stay after hours, like, and they're so polite, so it's not like the manager is going to tell them, no, we're closing soon. They let them stay for as long as they want.
Oh my god. What a grind.
It's really like, I really respect the girls that, because I feel like there are a lot of girls that are trying to get into the fashion industry or like the Japanese fashion magazines over there who want to be shop staff at 109. And the pay is not that great. So the fact that they'll do all of that for such a small amount of pay, like, that's, I respect it a lot.
Is that specific to 109? Or is it, it's probably like the same everywhere else, right?
Maybe. I did work in a bar and they paid me a lot more. I did work like through the night. So I feel like that's why the pay was a little better. But I think that if you're working in a bar or just a restaurant, izakaya or something, I think they'll pay like, I want to say $10. And when I was working at 109, it was like $8 an hour, basically.
Oh, wow.
So it seemed like a lot less than a regular part-time job. I think just because everybody wants to do it.
I see. It's really high demand. And would you say like working at 109, like, I mean, it got you some opportunities, but like generally, did it always lead to opportunities in the fashion industry?
I really think it's the same with anything, and it's just like what you do with that.
Right.
Like my problem with even being an ABEX, I thought that just by being there, I was going to like be able to do so much with music, and it's really about what you're doing on your own and what you're doing on the side and everything.
I see.
It looks cool on the resume, though.
You got to pad the resume. And I mean, in your time at AVEX, though, like you mentioned, like you had to go and do stuff outside on your own. Did you? And I mean, you did do those DJing opportunities. But I mean, to go and after doing those opportunities, did it ever kind of come back and like you can go back to AVEX and they might be like, oh, like you got this experience. Now we might like book you for something along those lines. Was there ever anything like that?
Well, when I did quit AVEX, I want to say in 2017, and I ended up going with a modeling agency instead.
I see.
So I'm not really sure. Like, I want to say if I would have stayed with them, maybe something could have happened. Because I think that's kind of what they want. Like, they want you to do the work, and then something happens, they'll promote you more. But yeah, they told me to make a YouTube channel, and that turned out pretty good, so... Yeah, I have them to thank for that.
Glad they asked you to do that. I mean, that's super interesting, though, that they were the ones that actually got you to make the YouTube channel. Because, I mean, we always wonder, like, kind of like the inspirations behind, like, YouTubers making their YouTube channels to begin with, you know, because it could be for, there's so many different reasons it could be for. But here, that was the reason. I mean, that's really cool. I mean, you started off with you had such good variety content, I would say, like right off the bat, too. Really good vlogs. Thank you. I mean,
it was crazy. Yeah. Like, they were basically like, oh, you're it's funny that you know these old J-pop songs and you're not even Japanese. Ha ha. You're funny. Make a YouTube channel. And I was like, about what? And they were like, I don't know. Talk about anime or something. And then this other like YouTube agency I was talking to at the time basically told me to make beauty videos and makeup videos since I was a girl. But those weren't even hitting. So I don't know. I'm really glad that I didn't go down that route.
Yeah, I mean, that's just really interesting hearing like the outside influence, because looking at your channel, I would have never thought there was some agency telling you like, oh, maybe you should go do this, maybe you should go do that. And right. I mean, and I guess like finding like the content that hit, like how did that end up happening for you? Were you just kind of experimenting around and you just found what you liked?
Yeah, I want to say that the video that took off first on my channel was my video explaining the difference between Japanese and American men. Like, it was just like some satire, funny stuff. And people really liked that. And then I started just talking about differences in culture, and I realized, oh, this is what I can talk about because this is my experience, and I don't have to edit a makeup video, which I don't like doing that at all, so...
Yeah, I mean, those videos you have are really funny. I mean, and very accurate. If any of haven't checked it out, it's if you've been to Japan, you'll instantly understand what's going on there. And I mean, you mentioned the language school as well. And I mean, for the amount of time you were there, how much would you say it helped out your Japanese for like people going and thinking about going to language schools when they go to Japan? Would you say it's worth it?
I think it's definitely worth it. I realize now, I tried to study Spanish a couple years ago, and I realized that it's really helpful to have like a class environment and have somebody telling you like, I don't know, do this for your homework and stuff. I feel like even an app would help better than just trying to do it on your own, but the language school really helped me kind of push myself. And then also with the kanji, like that was a huge reason I went, and I'm really glad I did because it helped.
Yeah. I mean, look at your Japanese, like in any of your videos now. I mean, it's crazy. Like how much time and hard work you put in goes a long way, you know? And I mean, a lot of our viewers are always interested because a lot of them are learning Japanese right now or thinking about learning Japanese. And I mean, it's always great to kind of see the people kind of starting from not knowing any Japanese and then kind of taking the step in the hard work. And then it kind of gives a lot of inspiration. And I mean, speaking of that though, like, did you have any specific methods or like plans you used to kind of attack studying Japanese that kind of worked out for you?
Well, I can tell you what not to do, and that's go out drinking every night and fall asleep in class. I'm sure I would have learned a lot quicker if I didn't do that. But when I actually started taking my studying seriously, kanji, I would put all the kanji I learned on flashcards and do it on the way to school, like when I was riding the train. I feel like that was really helpful. Like, I totally swear by flashcards when it comes to kanji, because it's like there's so many of them. We all know, but yeah. It's just a lot. It's a lot to go through. And then also, like, speaking to people is really important because, I mean, Japanese people study English, like, the whole time they're going through school, and most of them can't speak it just because they don't get practice speaking. So I feel like speaking it is also really important. And if you can get some Japanese friends or pen pals on the internet, people say pen pals still. If you can get somebody to speak with, that would be really good for your Japanese.
After those like 2 years of language school, were you able to like continue your Japanese studies, or do you feel like you got maybe like less rigorous about it?
Yeah, I definitely think I was less rigorous. And I guess that kind of shows to the fact that a classroom setting really helps. But at that point, I think I was pretty well off in Japanese that I was able to like understand what was going on in my next school, which was the beauty school. Because the beauty school was not for foreigners. The beauty school was just a regular Japanese beauty school. And I think that too, being surrounded in that, it really helped me learn. Also, like a lot of the kids there, because they were so young, they spoke a lot of slang. And that's another place where I learned like a lot of slang. Just being around like kids who just graduated high school.
I mean, it's always the best form of vocabulary, right? Just right. Listening to people, keeping up the communication. And I mean, one thing that you mentioned earlier that I found is always kind of funny to hear is, well, I mean, I guess this part's not funny on that side, but like Japanese people not really learning English. But I guess like the funny part is sometimes that they might come up to you with some really, how do I put it? A different way of English just coming at you, kind of just they'll just come at you, be like, hey, like, okay, I'm not able to do it. I'm gonna be honest. But have you ever had any moment where someone just walked up to you in like completely broken English out of nowhere and kind of caught you off guard?
I have a story, but I don't know if it's really appropriate for this podcast, but yeah, that's happened before. I talk about it on one of my YouTube videos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's ever too inappropriate, the Korekara listeners know when to close their ears, you know.
Yeah, people are weird. People are... The guys over there, I feel like, are really confident to walk up to, like, random girls and just, like, say some stuff. Like, that's something I feel like you don't really see as much in the States, like the Nampa culture.
Right. Oh, uh-huh.
So, yeah, there have been some weird experiences with that.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, we've had a lot of people come on the podcast and have weird experiences of people walking up to them and doing things as well. Was there any... I guess to give our listeners who are now kind of intrigued of what went down.
I know, I'm like holding back on the story. Basically, like this guy, he was just standing next to me and he was just saying nipuru, nipuru over and over again.
Oh my God.
Like, I don't know how he knew that word either, but he wasn't like, I don't know, he didn't sound very fluent. So he was doing his best though. He had a fedora on and everything. It was crazy.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, those are the kind of things like you hear, but you don't think actually happen in real life. You know, the fedora coming in with the really cringy
right.
things to say. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. But I mean, I'm pretty sure he was selective in his English dictionary and his right. vocabulary. He probably had one goal in mind. I guess he might have achieved it. Who knows? But maybe he's proud with his English learning. We'll see. Yeah,
gambare.
he's like 0.01% of the way there. But
at least he's trying.
At least he's trying. At least he's trying. And I mean, one thing you did try really hard for and succeed with is getting into the Vantan Design Institute in Japan. You're at the School of Fashion. What was kind of the story behind that? Because I mean, in the beginning, you did mention how fashion was one of like your initial like inspirations, one of the things that you really enjoyed about Japan. And now kind of going full circle and actually being able to go to a fashion school. How was all of that?
Yeah, that was a really cool experience. Basically, after you finish your first 2 years of language school and you get the JLPT, they kind of try to help you figure out what you want to do with your life next. So for me, they were like, okay, well, you have to get a job or you have to go to some kind of school to stay in Japan. And for me, I always, like you said, just had a thing for Japanese fashion. And Vantan kind of seemed more towards the Japanese makeup style. They had like a visual K course and stuff like that. So I don't know. I thought that might be more interesting than going to Bunka or something. My Japanese school helped me write up a little entrance exam or they helped me write up something to send it there. I guess I just applied the same way anybody else would. that was living there. It helped because I knew Japanese at that point. So as long as you know Japanese, I feel like you can really do anything. Well, not anything, but, you know.
Work some magic.
Right.
And now I guess Vantan really helped you after kind of taking all those classes, but did it also kind of prepare you for like your future endeavors, like including like your YouTube channel, where you really do showcase a lot of fashion over there?
I feel like it really helped me get surrounded or enveloped in like the fashion culture over there. And like I said, learn a lot of the like younger Japanese. I got to see what they were interested in and what school life was kind of like for like a younger Japanese crowd. I didn't end up going into makeup because I decided that I wanted to do entertainment. I wanted to do like what I came to Japan to do. So I had kind of given up on it for a little bit. And that was also another big reason for joining the beauty school. But I don't know. Eventually I came back around and I came back to what I actually wanted to do. So I still think it was a really good experience, whether or not I still do makeup or not, especially because I met a lot of people. Like I said, my really good friend from Japan, I met there and we're like really close now. So I don't regret it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, every experience is definitely worth it in the end. And I mean, you talked about how you kind of ended up coming around to kind of pursuing what you are doing right now. How did you kind of come to that realization of, okay, this is what I really want to do and this is what I want to do like going forward in entertainment?
So I had a friend who made music and that kind of sparked my interest in it a little bit. I remember, I want to say it was the year I entered beauty school. About a year later, I met this friend. We didn't hang out that much, but he just kind of got me back into it because he made music. And then while I was DJing, I kind of realized like, oh my God, I love performing. I just love getting the crowd hype. Like, this is so fun. But I also want to sing. Like, I want to make my own music too and not just be spinning other people's music. So for a while, I was like looking for producers in the scene and looking for people to help me make music, thought about producing my own music. And then I was like, yo, on YouTube, they have these thing called type beats and I can make anything I want. And that's like where it all began. Like, that was like the holy grail of making music.
Wow. And I guess like for the name Pinky, did you like have that like on lock from way before, or did it kind of like come to you around that time as well?
So Pinky is actually a name my stepdad used to call me growing up. Like, before I had pink hair or anything, he just would call me Pinky. So I was like, you know what? I got pink hair. I didn't really want to be Natalia Natchan doing the music that I make because I just felt like people really associated that with, like, the YouTuber. So I decided I just wanted to change my name. And I thought, I like how the lowercase I looks with the two capital letters. So I was just like, okay, we're Pinky now.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out great. I mean, you really embody it now at this point too. And I mean, it's great to see. And I mean, you mentioned the whole kind of holy grail of music. And I mean, of course, when you have like so many things that you can work with, it's almost like a little bit difficult to come up with something so like narrow down and pinpoint to like what you want to do, right? So kind of 100%. how did you figure out that direction?
Okay, so I released a song back when I was DJing, like, dubstep. It was called Trap Bandit. It's very cringy. I don't know if you've seen it before. Don't YouTube it, even though people probably are going to now. But I wanted to, like, rap in a cutesy voice because I still had a lot of the inspiration from, like, the cutesy idol stuff that I had loved growing up. And just cute. I just love cute Japanese culture. But the cute and like the hard and the hip hop and all that doesn't really mix that well in Japan. Like, people don't really see it as the same thing, especially back then. I feel like now people are coming around, but I really wanted to be able to like mix those two things and come up with something my own. And it kind of took a while because I was kind of afraid to branch out and like make something so different. But I don't know, I think once I started writing music more and just getting better at lyrics and also just making songs, I feel like it started to work. because I had like that core knowledge of just like making music.
I see. And I guess like speaking of your lyrics, how did you kind of, was it easy to get used to kind of blending in like English with Japanese? Because you do that really well in your songs. And I mean,
thank you.
If I, for one, were to try that, it would not go well. I'll tell you that. So
you never know.
Or maybe we'll have a Korekara music channel soon.
Yes.
Branch it off.
Subscribe, well, everybody.
Yeah, we'll feature you on our first single.
Nice.
But yeah, how did you kind of get the inspiration to really blend those together? And like, what was your kind of thought process behind doing that?
If I'm gonna be 100% honest, I want to say when I first started doing it, it was like, oh, I don't know what to put here. Let me put some Japanese. Sounds cool. But as it started going along, I feel like, I don't know, I like having that mix of two languages, because I feel like me speaking in Japanese is a huge part of, like, I don't know, I guess you would say my persona, or just like me in general. So I really like adding that. I feel like it adds part of me to my music, especially because my voice sounds so different in like English and Japanese. It's cool to be able to add both of those things.
I see. It makes it really dynamic too, I guess. And I mean, now you've kind of been, you've been pursuing music for quite some time now. And I mean, like you mentioned, like in the beginning, there's so much to work with and you kind of found a direction, but you really hone your craft as time goes on. What would you say is kind of like one area you feel like you've really improved since the beginning?
I think just writing in general, like, especially because now I like to do a lot of wordplay and stuff, especially wordplay that's related to like Japanese pop culture and stuff I just wouldn't have been able to do when I first started writing. Like, first when I started writing, just like everybody else, it was very simplistic and no wordplay, no clever puns or anything. And now, especially with rap, I get to do that a lot. And so that's really fun for me. And I worked pretty hard on like trying to get the flows right and then also the lyrics. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Very, very tough. I mean, anyone listening, you should go try right now to be, have, get a proper flow going. It's very
thank
difficult.
Thank you.
So do you produce the whole thing by yourself?
So usually I either have a friend, I have a couple friends overseas that'll produce a track and send it to me. And then I'll do like the words and the melody and the vocals. Or I'll just like go on YouTube and type in, I don't know, so-and-so type beat and then find a beat that I like and then just start kind of, I don't know, rapping to that, see what I like.
I see. And you've also had many music videos at this point as well. Do you have a favorite one that you like to shoot? For one of them,
I want to say my most recent video, the Hard Candy video. I'm pretty proud of that one. The girl who did it, her name's Holly, but she like really went out. I was really, really happy with how it came out. It took forever. The whole shoot was like a 12-hour day, but I'm proud of it.
Oh wow! How many takes did it end up taking? I mean,
I don't think we could count. Yeah. I just remember it was long. There was a lot of coffee, a lot of energy drinks, just a lot of everything.
And I mean, now kind of you really developed your music and kind of integrated it within your YouTube channel as well now. And what would you say your kind of goals now for your YouTube channel are? Because of course you've kind of started off as kind of what the agency told you, like, oh, you should go make a YouTube channel, but then you right. kind of really developed it into something by yourself. So now where would you say you want to head?
Right now it's mostly I just want to keep uploading music and putting music videos up there and kind of do what I've been wanting to do for so long. For a long time, I was just saying, I don't want to be a YouTuber anymore. I want to be an artist. I don't want to be a YouTuber. But I was continuing to make YouTube videos. So it was like kind of contradicting myself. Now I really am focusing mostly on like my music and making music and music videos. And sometimes, like today, I was editing a vlog for this Don Quixote that they have in LA. So sometimes it'd be cool to like showcase some Japanese stuff to my followers, but for the most part, I really want to use it for music.
I see. And I guess, like, speaking of Japanese here, like, now after coming back and being in America, you mentioned it was a lot less rigorous for you in terms of your Japanese, but what would you say has kind of kept your Japanese kind of, like, constant to your kind of level this entire time?
Definitely the YouTube channel. And pretty recently, like this year, I started streaming more. And I want to say streaming has helped a lot. Making vlogs in Japanese, just using it all the time really helps. Lately, I've been watching a lot of Japanese comedians too. And I've noticed just from watching those for a couple weeks, like I've been able to think a lot faster in Japanese. So I definitely still stick to the idea that you need to submerge yourself in the language to learn it.
I see.
Are you able to, like, find people around you who
do
you speak Japanese with? Like, do you have friends where you are at where you can speak Japanese?
I mean, I speak Japanese at them. I don't really know. They don't really know Japanese yet, but we're working on it. A lot of my friends are, like, studying Japanese, so I mean, besides the fact that I just keep using slang around them, I guess it would be cool if it would be helpful for them. Obviously, I haven't met a lot of people just because of COVID, but I do have a lot of just YouTubers and artists, Japanese artists that even live here that I would like to collaborate when everything calms down.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. And I mean, it's going to be very interesting with... I mean, hopefully everything starts opening up for sure. That'll be his number one. Hopefully. But yeah, I mean, and I guess regards to Japanese, like I mentioned earlier, we have many people who are listening, who are really learning Japanese and trying to get their own foothold on the language. And I guess a lot of them are on the self-study path. And I mean, for that, would you say you have any advice in terms of maybe something they could think about when they are learning, especially when they don't have kind of the, like you're mentioning, like this classroom structure to hold them accountable?
I would say it's the same with anything, but you really need to write down your goals and decide like where you want to be in the next couple of months or the next couple of weeks. And then kind of dissect those and write down how to get there. Because if you're just thinking like, I want to be good at Japanese, it's kind of hard to find a way to get there. But if you actually dissect it and have a plan, it's so much easier to follow. And I think that's why the classroom setting works out so well, is because you actually have a plan of what you're going to be doing and then a teacher to enforce it. But sometimes you got to be your own teacher. Also apps, flashcards. Don't forget the flashcards.
Don't forget the flashcards, indeed. And I mean, speaking of goals, I mean, you mentioned how you should have everything kind of all noted down. So I guess now for Pinky, what is your goal for this upcoming 2021 now? For the, what are we going to be expecting here? I guess not expecting, what do you want to do?
Well, a big goal is going to be to start performing this year, like doing live shows, but that all depends on the state of the world and the pandemic, so we'll see. I am releasing an album soon, though, so that is a current goal right now. I'm working on it, just finished recording, now got to get it mixed, and then voila, hopefully by summer.
Yeah, I mean, a lot to look forward to, and I mean, I think we can close it out on that. I mean, a lot of stuff to look forward to with your music career and a lot to be coming up on your YouTube channel. So everyone here at the Kodekata podcast is very excited to see what's coming up here. And I mean, I'm excited for summer even more now. Hopefully will be more time for you to collaborate too. Hopefully more stuff gets opened up, but hopefully. So yeah, thank you so much, Natalia, for coming on the Kodekata podcast. We're really honored and happy to have you take out your time today. And where can everyone go and find you?
Basically, if you type in It's Pinky, no spaces, Pinky with Two Eyes, you'll find me anywhere. Twitch, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. So yeah, just it's Pinky It. It's you'll be Pinky good. It.
That's the saying of the podcast. It's Pinky It Pinky and you'll it. Be good.
Yeah.
And I guess finally, we always have a little something to close out our podcast, which is the Korekara message to our listeners, which is could be anything. It'd be a fun little message, could be a Japanese proverb, could be a shout out, could be one word, could be anything. So, Natalia, what is your Korekara message to the listeners today?
I would say YouTube ni iine to touroku onegai shimasu, and make sure to go check out my music and stay genki.
Doya. And it's Pinky It.
It's Pinky It. Well, we get a double quote of the day, huh?
We do. I got you with the alley-oop.
Nice. Shout out to Korekara for being awesome.
Appreciate it. Hey guys, thanks for making it to the end of the podcast. Appreciate you guys as always. Want to go and quickly shout out our patrons, Sad Boy, Izenga71, Miku, Jack, Boy No Eyebrow 4, KH90, and Alan. And if you guys enjoyed the show, please make sure to like and subscribe. And with that, I'll catch you guys on the next one. Peace.